I'm not a critic. I'm not a scholar. I'm not even an Emersonian scholar. I just want to say, though, that I, a total non-professional, I love the man because he speaks to me.
Exactly so.
I mean, when
that puts it far better than I've been able to put it, because you've said something that's crucial for me. You were asking me before, why Emerson for me? Because when I was helping to spark that revival in 64, and when a year later, in the middle of the journey at 35, I fell into the deepest depression of my life. Mm. I read and read and read Emerson morning, noon, and night, and all night long. And I read all through the journals, and I felt that every phrase he had ever written, he was speaking directly to me, and he'd written it for me. And I still feel that way. And, of course, this is pure Emersonian doctrine, because think of that magnificent sentence early on in that extraordinary rhapsody, Self-Reliance. In every work of genius, we recognize our own rejected thoughts. They come back to us shining with a certain alienated majesty. Isn't that wonderful?
It's fantastic.
And my own definition of reading, which I take straight out of Emerson, even though this is not his wording, is to say, so far as I said this in a book called How to Read and Why, I think, I said, what reading really is coming upon it, recognizing it, and taking back what is already your own. And that is pure Emersonianism, I think.
Now we're getting there. I mean, this, and he talks about the book reading the person, it all being one book. One. I just want to come back to my own apprehension of the event.
Yes, he says it is very strange. He says, Borges, an immense Emersonian, takes this directly from him. Hmm. That all the books seem to have been written by one person.
Amen. Yes. But when he says, you know, only insofar as we are unsettled is there any hope for us at all, he's speaking to me. When he says, trust thyself, he's speaking to me. When he says, claim your idea before you read it in somebody else's name.
There is a sentence, there are many, many sentences in which I feel that Emerson is more than speaking to me. I mean, he's gotten inside my inner ear and has become indeed the best and oldest part of myself. Indeed, the God within, as it were, that speaks. But two sentences in particular. One of them is in Self-Reliance, where he says, and what a shattering sentence, as men's prayers are a disease of the will, so are their creeds a disease of the intellect. That is a magnificent sentence. And the other one is that great sentence. It's not in the essay Power, interestingly enough. It's in the essay Experience, but it is the best thing he ever said about power. Power, he says, does not reside in any instant of repose. It takes place always in the shooting of the golf and the darting to an aim. Mm-hmm. That is to say, pure transition as such.
Yes.
And that surely, again, is the most American of sentences, because this country, which is why I think it will yet shed the horrible bush, this is a country which is an Emersonian country.
Well, absolutely. Stick with Emerson the modern. He speaks to you. He speaks to me. I love him because he keeps alive a language of spirit. I'm also fascinated that he anticipates a kind of global technology. He anticipates the Internet in many ways. I mean, as a sort of metaphor for a global consciousness, for the interactivity of cultures, for a democratic world in which every person, every blogger can speak for him and herself.
It is true. I myself not a great appreciator of that great gray ocean of the Internet, in which I think too many young people with inadequate educations drown. Because how out of that mass of information are they to know the difference between information and knowledge, let alone knowledge and wisdom? He understands about Shakespeare what I've been saying for a long time, and I think I take this from Emerson, though he doesn't put it in so many words, that Shakespeare is the first and truest multicultural author.
He had this curiosity that the Internet somehow connects with about distributed knowledge in circles or someplace. He speaks of our capacity for infinite expansions. In that way, he seems to me sometimes a prophet of this new global community of universal information.
But do not forget that he insists that at all times, let's set him aside on the novel, but let's think of him in the realm of ideas, Let's think of him in the realm of speculation. Let's think of him in the realm of wisdom, literature, and of poetry.
Hmm.
He insisted upon the highest cognitive and aesthetic standards.
Yes.
And I do not find them manifested in what you are now discussing.
Well, it does take a critical mind to use the internet right.
It takes an educated mind, and as you know, our universities do not educate anymore in the English-speaking world.
Oh, well, that's an overstatement.
I wish it were.
Let me ask you the sort of quiz show question. Who was the 20th century Emerson who has these qualities of spirit, of community, of learning, of originality?
We haven't got one. We haven't got one.
Well, I mean, I have a couple of candidates, but I wonder who you would think of that has that kind of deeply American...
My friend Richard Rorty would be my best candidate for it, but Richard would be the first to say that that's ridiculous overpraise and he would be embarrassed by it. His lips have not been touched by that burning coal of fire that ignited the lips of the prophet Isaiah and of the prophet Emerson. I cannot think of a figure alive. There was Freud, but that's a different sort of a matter, and he died in 1939, was it, or whenever.
Can I try an odd one on you?
Yes.
Well, Stanley Cavell said Frank Capra.
Gott in your Mishpacha. Stanley and I don't always see eye to eye. I'm sorry.
Okay, my candidate would be Duke Ellington for range, for both darkness and light.
If we are going to go into the realm of jazz, where I'm very happy to go, my candidate would be Charlie Parker.
That's interesting.
Or maybe a combination of Charlie and his disciple, the magnificent Bud Powell.
Now that's interesting too. I would say more Dizzy Gillespie for his universality, for his international big
Dizzy
band.
Dizzy is very shallow compared to Bird and Bud, who are both of them very great musical figures. I mean, jazz. The great figure in jazz remains Armstrong. After that, you would have to say, include Ellington, Mingus, Thelonious, Charlie Parker, Bud, Coltrane, a few others, Lester Young.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a good list, but I would say...
But nevertheless, it's very difficult to transpose, you know, to music. Kenneth Burke would be my own nomination for the best American literary critic of the 20th century. And he was a very dear friend, and I revered him and learned a great deal from him, and we meant a lot to one another, but it's a long road down from Ralph Waldo Emerson to Kenneth Burke. No, I don't think we have such a figure. I wish we did.
Stick with the musical
and
notion.
I do not for a moment entertain the absurdity of believing that I am such a personage. I am a rather different phenomenon, but go on.
Duke, for one thing, he has the circle, as Emerson had a Concord circle. He had the band. He had these other voices that he enabled. He had a long life. He had long forms, short forms, dance forms, sacred forms. He had that acquaintance with the dark side and yet an exuberant, triumphant, continuing sort of persevering spirit.
You know what's missing from Ellington? You know an amazing piece of Bud Powell's called Un Poco Loco?
Oh, amen.
You listen to those three versions in a row of Un Poco Loco, and you hear what does not get into Ellington. There's a marvelous recording that I have over there. The one thing that Ellington...
Blue Note recording?
No. I'm talking now about something about Ellington. Ellington and Charlie Mingus, and one of our closest friends is Sue Mingus, the widow of Charlie. Ellington and Mingus did a marvelous record together called Money Jungle.
Mm.
With Ellington on the piano, and with Max on the drums, and with Mingus at his most magnificent on the bass. Mind you, we are talking about the great American art form of the 20th century. I mean, we have had great poets. We have had Wallace Stevens and Hart Crane. We have had Faulkner. There are alive four American novelists, I think, or quasi-novelists of genius, Mr. Pynchon, Cormac McCarthy, if only for Blood Meridian, which is a book worthy of Melville, worthy of Moby Dick. Philip Roth, especially for Sabbath Theater and American Pastoral. Don DeLillo for Underworld. Not sure that we have Ashbery among living poets. Archie Ammons is dead and Jimmy Merrill is gone and Miss Bishop is long gone and Miss Swenson is long gone. I would suppose that if you take the whole history of 20th century American jazz, then it would be the great contribution of American aesthetic culture in the 20th century. But look, of course, what's happened to it. it's lost its audience. The young men and young women of Yale, with very rare exceptions, do not listen to Charlie Parker and Duke Ellington and Bud Powell. As for the African Americans, they have lost this heritage completely. It has been replaced by the sloppy glop of hip-hop.
No, I was just going to say, but thinking of the 20th century, was there an Emersonian figure among them?
I'm a jazz man.
I think of range, affirmation.
It is deep sorrow, after all, in Emerson. I mean, we forget it, but he had lost everyone he loved the best. His brother Charles, his first wife Ellen, his little son Waldo. Just he refuses to let himself be dominated by mourning and grief. He's too strong for that. Too much a survivor. And also, you know, the family malady was tuberculosis. Somehow, by a toughness of will, he outlasted that and lived a long life. Ellington has a lot of wisdom. Ellington is magnificent, but there's nothing in him like Parker's mood or Un Poco Loco. My late friend Ralph Ellison, who wrote that one great book, was really quite right. In the end, despite Faulkner, despite Hart Crane, whom I love beyond love, the great American art of this century is jazz from Armstrong's breakthrough right down to almost its last stand in a great still-living figure like Sonny Rollins, who was so isolated. You're right that Ellington is the most comprehensive figure. But for one thing, in terms of aesthetic achievement, I suppose I would have to put Louis first and Parker second. And in the end, if it's a choice, of course, Bud Powell for me is like Hart Crane. You know, I used to go here, Bud, all the time in New York, at Minton's, at Birdland, when I was both a Cornell undergraduate and then when I was a graduate student and a young teacher here. I got to know him. He was an immensely literate man. And I gave him the collected poems of Hart Crane to read, and we discussed them. And I told him I deeply associated him with Crane. The doom eagerness of both, and the... And Poco Loco is sort of like the Broken Tower. It's really there at the outer limits. I don't think we've had that single figure in jazz. After all, Emerson is a man who keeps notebooks and journals, and out of it he engenders the essays, the lectures, the sermons, the whole stance. We haven't got anyone like that. We're not going to have anybody like that.